I'll just take some time and I'll just do a bunch of shit.
I'm James, and this is My Life in Virginia. Today is January 1st, 2020. We made it, kids. Everybody survived the big evening of festivities, and here we are today, this evening, sitting with my buddies in Spirit Gun.
I'm Oren. I'm the drummer, and I like to give Pete a hard time.
And occasionally he sings backing vocals as well. I'm Pete Overstreet. I'm the lead singer and guitarist.
And I'm Steven. I play a six-string bass, and I sing on rare occasion.
I like the distinction. He plays six-string bass.
Because people always think, ooh, six strings. I used to say bass, and I'm like, ooh, it's six. So I just make a point to point that out to everyone who doesn't know.
When Pete first told me, he was like, yeah, you know, got this bass player, plays a six-string bass. My first thought was like, ugh, six-string bass. Ugh, I hate
that
stuff.
Were you a Dream Theater tribute band?
I know, what is he, like
band?
A Rush guy? Or like, is everything done in tonal modes?
Yeah, but we just like walk back from where you have your kit scattered across like 2.5 rooms. So I see your reaction to six strings, right?
Yeah, totally. But like when Steven played, I was like, wow, I've never seen anyone play a six-string bass like that, because he plays it for the melody, for the effect, not for just like, hey, look at me, I got two extra strings.
Well, I was going to say, another great thing about him playing a six-string bass is that he kind of steps into some of that mid-range, and since we are a three-piece, it kind of creates that glue that we need.
If you met on the street, if you guys are walking down the street, and everybody kind of had, here's my talents, here's my background. We threw it into a jar and drew out and said, we're going to put a band together. I think this group of people, just based on that, would be one of the more interesting combinations.
I mean, like, we're all just, like, very, very personnel. We have wildly different personalities, like, viewpoints. I think we're all different religions, and too, as well. It's just, like, and they're old fogies compared to me, but right? Like, at the end of the day, we're all just friends hanging out, making music.
In fact, I'm trying to think the first time I saw you guys. It may have been at 37th and Zen.
It may have been, yeah.
And there was typical 37th and Zen, I think it was a bill of, what, 15 acts or something like that, maybe?
At least five.
Could have been, yeah. Some of my DJs and there was some DJs. Marine-sized drag queens, you know, the whole gamut.
The whole gamut. I think that may have been the evening as well that things got waylaid because we were looking for a quarter-inch patch cable, if I'm not mistaken. Or was that somebody else that night?
No. Oh, maybe. Was that? Yeah, that I think so. I think maybe, did someone have to go home or someplace to get one or something? I don't remember. It all blends together, but maybe it's quite possible.
In fact, it's entirely possible. Now that I'm thinking this a little bit, I think Pete came up to me and asked, do you happen to have, it was either a quarter inch patch candle or like an electrical plug for an amplifier. I'm like, that's a camera. No.
Was not around anymore. I don't know if it grew legs and decided to try to make its way on its own. I'm not sure.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's entirely possible.
It's not a question that everything is always cohesive and perfect. Is that when one guy falls, you fall with him. And you guys fall and don't break your leg. You know, that's the real thing. It's not about succeeding. It's about recovering really well together. It's failing beautifully. Because people are afraid of failure. They don't realize it's not always about failing. It's about being authentic. That's the main thing.
And I think that's coming back to what you were saying earlier about how, you know, how did we get together? Because we don't all have the same look or the same style or whatever. But I think why it works is we complement each other, because I like to play my drums simple and loud. So, you know, I just want my kick drum to just pound through the door. I want it to be simple. I want you to hear what's going on. Steven makes me sound better than I am because his bass playing is insane. He'll be doing rhythms and stuff I didn't even think of. And I'm like, ooh, I'm going to steal that. Good job. So we lay it down, and then Pete, I mean, his vocals are in a different level, and then his guitar playing, it usually you don't have a singer and a guitar player that play like that as the same person. So, you know, it is the same person, and it freaks a lot of people out, but he's not just the singer who plays the guitar or the guitar player that sings. He is the singer, and he is the guitar player. So How we all got together, we still don't know. I have no clue, but I'm glad we did because it works.
Well, it's a couple happy accidents, and I can bring up two things. I used to work with Steven at the Great Bridge location of Harris Teeter. And the first time I saw him, he had way longer hair than what he does now. And I was making subs that day, and he came up and did not say hello. He was headbanging, and he had earbuds in his ears. And I was like, who the hell is this guy? Who is it? And he's like, Turkey Sammy. I'm like, what the hell is a Turkey Sammy? Right? But I was like, I will never forget that day. I was like, there's something about this guy. There's an essence here, an energy, a charisma that like sold me on him. And at the time, I had some different lineups for Spirit Gun. We had a gentleman named Kurt Patterson, who's a really great friend. And he's played in numerous bands in the area, and he's got a million stories himself. Steven came in by way of that, and we were getting together. And Kurt got busy with other projects. He couldn't really give the full dedication that Spirit Gun was requiring. And I had seen Oren a couple times off and on, because we've known each other for about, you know, 22 years.
The 90s.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, this guy's been playing in bands way before I was even playing guitar. You know? And I mean, besides just playing E minor and A. I don't know. I called Oren up one day and I was like, hey, you know, I'm looking to get some buttons made. And he goes, yeah, I can cut you a good deal. I'm like, I'm broke. He goes, yeah, I know. He said, yeah, maybe I can be the drummer in Spirit Gun. And I was like,
To be clear, you were like, oh, you still playing drums? I was like, I don't know. And then
I got some kids now.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, you know, I haven't played in a while, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you were just like, well, you know, I may need a drummer if you're interested. I was like, yeah, maybe, sure, hit me up, let me know. You know, it's one of the things you do.
Some sticks in
yeah,
it.
And, but Pete being Pete, he called me back up next week. And it's like, okay, cool, we got a show in July that's in a few months, you ready to go? I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, you said you're going to be the drummer, right?
I'm talking about you.
Yeah, I was like, okay. So he rolls in with Steven. I'm like, God, who's this long hair six string bass guy?
Heavy metal Frodo.
Yeah. And it just kind of clicked. So
in a group like this, where there's lots of sonic stuff going around, how do you find room inside all that?
Just to start, the reason I play a six string is just because the way I play bass and the way I handle and I hold it is, I mean, the way I was taught to play bass, I was taught to play one finger per fret. I think the traditional way is four fingers to three frets. So in order to like hit like really low E's, I'd have to stretch my hands and fingers really long, and that's most painful playing at a four. So with a six, it's very easy for me to just play in lower ranges with that extra low string, and I don't have to strain myself as much. And just having all that that extended range just helps me. Just the way I learn to play scales is just, I don't want to move my hand at all across like horizontally across fretboard, so just having all the extended range just helps me do that and just easier for me to play. But in terms of like fitting that into this whole like sonic dynamic range, really wasn't much of an issue for me. I don't really, personally, I don't think I do anything horrendously fancy. Not sometimes I do, but like not as much as I should for someone who plays six strings. But, like, just the way Pete plays guitar, he gives a lot of space for me, the way he plays. There is so much space for me to actually do things and to walk around and do fun little, like, mini solos and stuff. That's just the way Pete plays. Because I remember when I first started playing with him, he had this philosophy of playing guitar where it's like, it's not about like how many notes you can shove in there all at once. And as someone who's really into like extreme metal, I know what he was talking about when he talked about guitarists who try to shove as many notes in there as possible. Like, I know exactly what he's talking about, and it annoys shit on me. So playing with Pete and with his guitar philosophy was just a breath of fresh air for me. And it really, I had no trouble fitting in at all. with his play style.
Some of the upcoming stuff. There's one song specifically on there. What you're talking about? Can we say the names of these?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So Gypsy. The first things that came across for me was Underground, followed up by Pulp Fiction.
You can break my heart.
We recorded it ourselves, but we got it mixed and mastered by our buddy Rome at ALM. And, you know, we're emailing back and forth. I'm sending him the stems. And Gypsy was the first one we sent him. And he just messaged back and he was like, so it's got like a 50s garage surf rock feel. And I was like, yeah, sure. Go for that. So that's kind of what he mixed it to. And, you know, worked out pretty well, I think.
You can break my
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That space rock, that surf kind of sort of thing is exactly what was coming out on this.
The EP is called New Eyes. And the idea that life has its setbacks and its adversities, and New Eyes is kind of like the song that's in the middle of all this, you know, stuff going on. Like, you know, Gypsy is about, you know, unrequited love, or maybe... you know, fake love, you know, and then Restless is about longing.
You don't need my money. You just want all of me. Now you can stay angry. Because you're not angry with me. I'm restless for you. I'm restless for you.
You know, and then Jenny Walker's about maybe trying to make something work that is not really working.
Why you gotta give me the cold shoulder? You're not the girl I used to know. Why you gotta give me the cold shoulder?
If this person is not even, like, they're not even alive as a person, that they, you're still going to try to, it's like the Black Knight from, you know, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
It's a kind of a journey of perspective, not to put kind of a prog rock feel to it, but yeah. It's definitely, it, New Eyes is just kind of a shorthand for like a different perspective, a different way of looking at things. And when you can get to something with new eyes, you've really turned a corner.
I've got
that's what these songs kind of have in common. They're all about a different perspective, a different way of looking at sort of our, let's say, our protagonist in the EP, the cover, which you all will see. It's pretty cool.
It is.
That will be, that's our guy who is experiencing all this. He's going on the journey. He's getting new eyes. He's changing his perspective.
It's interesting. When we were working on this song, this was a reworking of an older song that was more, had this sort of anemic sort of white boy funk kind of thing. And I was just wanting to revisit it. And that's when Orin had suggested that we make it more straightforward, and we make it about a guy whose girlfriend is a zombie.
Nice.
And I was like, that is brilliant. You're a brilliant man. And we were working on it, and we just kind of stopped. And as Steven started playing the bass, he was still playing the bass, and I looked at him, and we were recording just to kind of get a feel for it, like a demo recording. And I was just like, go, keep going, keep going, keep going. And that's when we decided, well, hold on. Okay, so he's going to do that. Well, let's bring it back in. But we were like, that's brilliant, because it happened on accident. And we were like, no.
Yeah, yes, and it
works.
It took a 3-minute song, and when you guys see it on the EP, I think it clocks in at like 8.5 minutes.
Something like that.
Yeah, so it's, and you know, if we're going to take your attention for 8.5 minutes, we got to keep it interesting. So, you know, the middle section just, you know, keeps changing and evolving.
Thanks.
Listen to it carefully.
Yeah.
Lots of credit goes to Pete, because, so it's 8.5 minutes, right? So there's, you know, first, chorus, then there's this monster middle section. Pete did all of that in 8.5 minutes. That's one take. He played the rhythm. Whoa. He did the lead. He did, so that's, and granted, it's not perfect, but it feels right. That's, you know, we're going for perfect is the feel, not if you're metronome straight and if you hit every note. If it feels right, it's good. And he did it in one take. So that, I always give him credit for that, because that's an impressive feat.
That is
very impressive. I appreciate him saying that now in the present moment, because I would definitely have to say that there were many late nights and many takes where I think I did not...
So let's clarify. He did it in one take after 40 tries, but
and maybe it was occasional one take. Screaming in the hallway, and maybe wanting to hit my head against, you know, aluminum. But
it's always one take. I mean,
it was so easy. No, it wasn't. But I tell you what, though, those are the things that build good bands. Is being able to get into the pressure cooker together.
It's a fun one to play live, because like when the crowd's into it, it can be a 12-minute song. And when we got to hurry up and get on stage, it can be a 4-minute song. So, you know, just depends. But we can definitely feel each other out and see where we're going with it.
It could be a song that starts if I start talking too much.
Yeah, sometimes it just starts happening in the background. Pete's got to jump in.
Oh, I hear the drums. Oh, man. Well, okay, here we go. Steven here, you know, he has a huge metal influence. And... you know, loves the, you know, early Sabbath stuff. And, you know, I love Gang of Four and Joy Division and the early Cure stuff. And I didn't used to, but I see how people, they don't want to listen to music with their head. They want to listen to music with their hips. So you can be punk rock and you can be danceable when you have a post-punk influence. And I think that mixed with the a visceral, emotional style of soul, it's a beautiful combination. Because then we've got a interesting bass player, and people are swinging their hips, and I'm not drowning him out, and I'm not drowning myself out. I mean, if it's anything that when I see other bands, I am always for the singer doing well, and it seems like a lot of times singers drown themselves out with their own guitar. And I always feel like I want to always give myself room. And I definitely have learned that over the years, even from the other members that were in this project. You know, so it definitely has been a blessing, because it's almost like I was ready for them when they came in. And that's why the synergy works.
Spherical was kind of like my first serious musical project. I mean, before that, maybe like 4 years ago, I first picked up a bass and just dabbled with it, and then 3 years later I got a little serious with it, and I was just jamming out with my brother. He played drums, and, you know, my friend Sam would play guitar, and we were just, that was nothing serious at all, just messing around, and I was just kind of, like, recording my own little, starting to learn how to record my own music, but this was the very first serious musical thing I've ever done, really.
Do any of those recordings still exist someplace?
On an iPod I can't find.
All right. There is a reward to find this iPod right now.
I've heard some of these things, though, and they're very good. And he's an exceptional guitar player as well as a bass player.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
I'm actually, right now I'm learning how to, basically teaching myself how to play electric guitar. I've got like a 7-string guitar. It's got to be extended range. And,
nice.
I
thought he was going for
crazy,
but it didn't happen, so.
Crazy amp I bought from Oren.
You were recording basically for yourself, and then you jump into this group.
Yes. I mean,
he was fully formed. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it takes people, you know, you first pick up a bass when you're 16, and then you play, and then mm-hmm. you're in bands, and then you got to get comfortable on stage, and then, I mean, from the minute he, like, Pete was like, yeah, we're playing in July, I got this bass player, come on over and play, you know, Steven was fully formed. He could rock the bass, he danced around on stage, he could sing, he was fully formed. I was like, where did you find this guy? You know, he just found him out in outer space. Who knows?
I don't even know.
Theater.
And you're right, you know.
He just jumped right in. And that thing is Pete. I mean, Pete is nothing if, I will say, Pete has a curious mind, and he's relentless. So he'll be like, hey, Steven, you want to be in my band? No? Okay, cool. Hey, Steven, have you thought about it? You want to be in my band? No? Hey, Steven, you want to be in my band? Okay, fine, I'll come out. Jeez, leave me alone.
This usually doesn't work in the world of dating, just with playing music.
It definitely works for him in music, that is for sure. I cannot speak to other areas.
It's a borderline stalker in some other areas, right?
I got your pack of bass strings, buddy. What's up? Come on over. I'll make you some lunch and some coffee.
What were you doing before all this came along?
Nothing. My drums had been packed away for 5-6 years. I used to be in a band called Control Council, the deadliest band alive. And we would tour around. We were pretty good. And when that kind of fell apart, like, I tried getting other bands together, but, you know, we were a band that was a well-oiled machine. We played out of town. We had recordings. You know, it's hard to just find three other dudes who just want to get drunk on the weekends, you know? So I couldn't get a band together, and I just hung it up. I put my drums in their cases, threw them in the garage, and I didn't play for 5-6 years until Mr. Pete's like, hey, you still playing? I'm like, no. He's like, well, we got a show in July. I'm like, oh, God, here we go. So, you know, granted, I was a somewhat seasoned drummer. You know, I played around. But, you know, try not doing something for 5-6 years and then coming back into it. I was nervous. It was a tough transition in the beginning. But, you know, I definitely, you know, I'm grateful for Pete for that. Because even my wife was saying, she was like, you need to do something. You're missing something. I'm like, I think it's music. So, you know, it came along at just the right time. I was ready to jump back in.
In the dynamic, how does the writing process for all this work?
It's in the beginning, I think it was traditionally Pete, you know, had songs and we would play on them. But now I think it's a lot more collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
Pete definitely still comes up with riffs all the time. He's got song ideas, he's got lyric ideas, he's got melodies, and then he just kind of brings it to us. We put it through the filter, and we get what we get.
Well, the one thing I've experienced from writing with him now, when we finally started walking into that more collaborative thing, not just, hey, I've got these songs that I used to do in a coffee shop by myself. It's like they come in, and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they've got full custody of the kids with me. Oren's a great lyricist as well. And Steven is very good with structure and layering. So I think that that's a good combination, because then it gives me a chance to kind of focus on my strong points and kind of let them come in with their thing and then try to fit in what I'm missing. There's no tug of war. We let the song become what it's going to be. I've known Oren, like I said, for 20 years or so, and the one thing I always admired about him when I would see him in these other bands is that he always was great with marketing and understanding what it means to build a brand. and I always admired that about him. So when he decided to come in, I knew that he would contribute great as a musician, but I also know that he would contribute great as sharing a vision and being able to make that vision and brand three-dimensional.
Well, sure. The button business started. I used to have, in the early 2000s, I had my own business called Totally Awesome Super Sweet Stuff. We sold...
nice.
We sold rubber duckies, bobbleheads, action figures...
Obama, you know, coffee mugs.
Yeah. Kitschy stuff, all sorts. So, you know, I'm selling, you know, I have my own website, which, you know, in the early 2000s wasn't the easiest thing to do. Right. I sold on eBay, I sold on Amazon, you know, everything's going swimmingly. But, you know, I always wanted in the back of my mind to do band stuff. So I got into making custom buttons, and then we were going to start doing t-shirts and, you know, all that stuff. And that's where that came from. So I had to market my rubber duckies. I had to do all that stuff. And so, you know, that was great. And that was my dream job. But then the economy crashes and nobody's looking for, you know, nobody's buying rubber ducks. Nobody's buying action figures. So, yeah. You know, I had to go get a real job. I had to go do all that stuff. So, you know, in the back of my mind, I always wanted to put those skills to use in music again. I just didn't have the opportunity. And, you know, when this came up, I was like, cool, I know how to do this.
You gotta let people know about your talent somehow or other, whether it's marketing or self-promotion or sort of be able to kind of bring that to the table without relying on outside influences doing it for you. Seems like it's gold.
Well, the punks in the 80s were very good at it. And because the industry has changed... you do have to wear many different hats, because if you did exist in the space of what is still the remnants of the modern mainstream music industry, you would be scourged by a 360 deal. But we don't mind, because if we ran a restaurant, we'd wash the dishes and cut the onions and, you know, write out the receipts, you know. Well, we're not playing for PBRs, you know. We want this to go somewhere, and even if it's just being a dark horse to a certain demographic of people, we just want to be genuine to the people that appreciate us here in Norfolk or even in another state.
Something that maybe like 3 years ago I just started doing randomly out of like pure boredom. I was like, I wonder how you draw a dragon. To Google how to draw a dragon. And it's like doing tutorials and crap. And eventually I just started going to art school and stuff like that, and just learning that, oh wow, I can actually kind of draw. What the fuck? The way I tell people, like, oh, I wish I could draw, it's like, Your idea of talent, having natural ability, is bullshit. Real talent is interest and being able to pound your head against the wall as much as physically fucking possible until you get it right.
I think it's what Puff Daddy said. He said, you know, I'm nowhere near as talented as you, but I'll work twice as hard.
I'm going to loosely get this right. But we all go see each other perform and get stirred up and go home and create. And yes, that kind of sounds like the definition of a scene of some sort.
Well, I believe in that.
Expound on that.
Well, I believe that like we're doing our thing, but we're also excited for our friends that are doing the same thing. And it's in that we should all push each other to do really well. And I've always admired, ever since I was a teenager, the phenomenon known as the Seattle music scene, and how they all supported each other and they loved each other, and have wanted for many years to see that happen in Norfolk. And then also keeping in mind the history that Norfolk has, you know, with Gary U.S. Bonds and Link Ray and Gene Benson and all those people, and Ella Fitzgerald, you know, the lineage. And instead of just the whole thing of, oh, well, we're really good and we don't have anything else to learn, you know, like, put us with the band that will make us work hard, you know, not just, oh, well, we just hope we do better than the other band, but no, actually go and appreciate and support other bands and learn from each other.
So what other bands push you guys?
It's fun when we get a night off, we get to go, you know, see other bands and see what's going on. You know, Miles and Mosquito Cabaret, they've always been, you know, they're great friends. They're an awesome band. You know, we love to see them. They push us. You know, our buddies in Backside Slappy, they're, you know, great dudes. They always support us, you know, insanely tight. You know, Missy and Tornado Bait, you know, I just like going out to see Tornado Bait so I can grab some toys and just jump on stage and make some noise, you know?
That is kind of their vibe, too. You know?
You know, they always, you know, these are our friends. These are who we like to see. These are who we, you know, me personally, for drums, I like going out and seeing Drew Orton. Any band he's in, Bennett Wales and the Relief or Demons, I just go just to be like, oh, cool, I'm going to steal that drum roll.
I mean, you know, Gabriel Perry, you know, he's got Death House Blues. He's got Hindu Pez. I don't know if he still has that anymore.
Oh, he's got a new band, Black Mass Gathering.
Oh, there you go, Gabe. There's a little drop on your new project.
There it is.
But, like, I've known Gabe for approximately 20 years now, I guess, as of today. And the first time I ever met Gabe was in 1999. I was at a coffee shop playing solo gigs. And he showed up and just sat down and started playing with me. But, you know, he's an exceptional guitar player, an exceptional composer of music. And just Gabe's a hard worker.
Jesse Phillips, he plays with James Wagner in Pain in the Ass. They're an awesome Norfolk band. We've got a lot of great talent in this area. All of Pete's, you know, family in Shock Treatment. He's in the Ramones band Shock Treatment. So, you know, Darrell and Miles's band and Tiffany's and Death Valley Rally.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there we always go support them and see who's happening. Oh, and Lazy Dangers. You know, they're awesome. They play around. You know, we play with them a bunch. It's, you know, it's what's really cool about our scene is there's so much diversity, but it works. You know, we have bluegrass bands and bluegrass punk bands and world music and, you know, whatever we are. And, you know, so you just mix it all together and we can all play together on a Saturday night. Yeah, Charlie's has definitely turned into a scene. You know, some nights, you know, if they're just doing something, you know, it's going to be a good show. Yeah.
The one thing about Miles that I appreciate about him ever since the first time that I met him and he heard his play is that in his mind, when it comes to everybody that plays in this area, everybody's in. And that's the right mindset. That's the right mindset for success. And I don't just mean monetarily. I mean just being able to maybe have the world be drawn to this geographical location known as Norfolk, Virginia. If the attitudes and the mindsets are right, it's not about promotion, it's about attraction. And people will be attracted to this area. Well, there's a certain film that, like a certain cellophane that rests on this area that says that we can't have anything better than what we have, or we try to revamp the thing and then the revamp thing doesn't work. So they revamp the thing that was revamped and then we wait another year and they get a bulldozer and they revamp the thing. And instead of just being like, no, we've got history here and we can have great art here.
we're us. Yeah. We need to realize we are us. And I think it's slowly bubbling. It's there. It just hasn't, you know, the Neon District is pretty cool. That's sticking around. The, you know, the Tap House is a beacon of light for, you know.
Most definitely. And we just want to take a shout out to Parker Harrington. We just really appreciate how he treats us and how Gabe Perry treats us when he's running sound for us.
Yeah, so
it's our home.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, our home and a lot of other bands in Norfolk that, you know, that gives us a place to be that, you know, the new stage is awesome, the new PA is awesome, the staff is always great, you know, it sounds amazing in there. So that we have these things. Now, that's the problem, is we have these things, but then they get too big, and then we bulldoze them, and we try to do something else. Yeah. So, you know, as long as we can realize, look, this is us, this is what we do, this is who we are, and just let it be, I think we'll, you know, as you said, our image problem will definitely clear itself.
But to counterpoint that, Warren wrote in our mission statement, you know, Norfolk is where we live, but the world is where we play.
So what are the plans to expand beyond? Is there a tour in the upcoming... near or long term, or
that's what we're looking for 2020. You know, maybe not a solid, you know, 3 weeks on the road, but definitely all year and hitting, you know, hitting going north, you know, Richmond, DC, you know, Philly, Delaware, you know, it's New York, hitting the south. You know, Carolina has some of the, you know, most fun places
Raleigh.
I've ever played. In my
Wilmington.
Hitting all those spots. So we're definitely, you know, once the EP comes out in, you know, the beginning half of the year, we're gonna just, you know, bring it to the people, and, you know, wherever someone wants to see us and hear us, we will be there. I think one of the best sounding rooms in the city, but that isn't utilized, is 37th and Zen. That
definitely agreed.
That stage is amazing, that building is amazing, but it's just so in a weird no man's land of Hampton Boulevard. It's not quite Ghent. It's not quite ODU. And, you know, I don't think people are aware of it as much as they should be. But the room there sounds amazing. Virginia Beach, the bunker's great. We've played there.
The bunker is great.
That's an awesome place to play.
Capstan Brewery, which is over by Exploration Highway. It's kind of over where NASA is. So it's a sort of development that's happening out there. Very cool, kitschy place, kind of tiny. We played with two really cool bands. One band called Red Weather, which almost they sound like Archer's a Loaf, you know, or Pavement. Very tight, very good. Another band called Splintercat, female fronted band, and it was great to be to do an away game, so to speak. And in August we played in Kerrytown in Richmond. Garden Grove Brewery with our friends Shem and I Love.
In February, we'll be at the Vanguard at the Veer Music Awards.
So I grew up in East Ocean View in Norfolk. I wasn't born here, though. I was born in Roanoke. Me and my parents, we moved here when I was 3 years old. And in my 20s, I lived in Ghent. And then I moved away to... I think I've pretty much lived in every city in the seven cities with the exception of Hampton and Newport News. I've had a taste of each of the cities, so...
And survived each of them.
It would appear so. But I'll say this. There's nothing like living in Suffolk and walking outside and smelling roasting coffee from the Lipton plant down the street.
You can break my heart.
Norfolk is just like a pair of jeans. I don't want to get rid of them. You know, a lot of people, they complain so much about here, but there's so many people I love here, so many places I love to go here.
You know, what's funny is Virginia itself is kind of, Virginia's the end of the South. So it's not, you know, we're not Yankees, we're not Northern, we still have Southern hospitality, but we're not as Southern as the people in the Carolinas and people in Georgia. You know, it's the end of the South. And Norfolk is, you know, Norfolk's very metropolitan. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on, but you still have Southern hospitality. So it's a very, you know, no offense against, you know, Philly and New York and Boston, but like when you go to those places, they're a lot more fast-paced. People won't hold the door open for you. People won't necessarily stop and have a conversation. But you get that in Norfolk. So it's big enough. It's small enough. It's nice enough. It's mean enough. It's just, like Pete was saying, it's like an old pair of jeans. It's just, you know, it's nice enough. That's why I stay.
I'd rather be in a town and do what I love to do and be around the people that I love and be supported by them than try to go to some other city and make it happen, because there's no reason why you cannot do what it is that you want to do and reach a level of success, especially with the means that we have now. You know, it's like what they used to say back in the day. Oh, if you want to make any music, you got to go to New York. Well, that's just not true. And then we think about the DC hardcore scene from the early 80s with Discord and Ian MacKaye. I think they proved that you don't need to move to a city to make it happen. You can make happen in your own hometown.
Oh, you told me my money. Oh, you just wanna all of me. Now you can't stay angry. Oh, because you're not angry with me. Oh, I'm restless for you. I'm restless for you.
Is social media feeding the beast that we want it to feed at this point?
I think that social media continues to allow vulnerable people to be continually misunderstood instead of letting vulnerable people be in the same room together so that they can understand one another because they see each other and they can have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. But how do you think all this kind of impacts what we see in our local scenes?
Because you can't judge intent by a text or by not seeing a person. And that's the difference between, I like it and I hate it when people will live stream a show, because it's neat for 30 seconds. Like, hey, check out where I am. It should be used as a tool to say, look where I am. Come on out and join me. Come on out into the world. Instead of, here's 15 minutes of a band. Live vicariously through me. Because guess what? It sounds like crap on the phone. It's going to sound amazing in the room. The bass is going to reverberate through your body. You're going to feel it. You're going to feel good. You feel better when you leave a show because you've experienced the music. You've experienced the feeling. You've talked to people. You've been out. That's what life is. You can use social media to be the jumping off point to interact with people, but it can't be everything. And that's why people need to go to shows. They need to see bands. It's not, I'm doing this because it fills a hole in my soul, but I also want to pass it along to you so it fills a hole in your soul. That's why you need to go out and experience the real world.
It's going to be in an environment where some people are simply having fun or they're meeting old friends, but some people are there because they're really hurt, you know? So we want to go into a room and create an environment where we can pull them into a space of where they're not there for that anymore, at least for a short period of time. And maybe they leave a little bit better off than what they did coming in. And maybe, like Oren was saying, they pull that guitar out of the closet. they go get those drums out of the attic. You got a lot of people walking around with broken hearts and broken dreams, man. So if we're out and we're playing and we're setting the captives free, so to speak, then we're doing our job. Not because of the fact that, you know, we got a really good food and bar tab that night. You know, it's important. It really is important because there's moments waiting to be experienced. Not here at home, not here on your couch, not with the binge watch. I mean, there's a time and place for everything. That's the biggest killer in our culture is isolation. Like I said, man, you know, we do this first because we love it. That's where you got to be. And if you are playing to two people, then you play your heart out.
Give them the best show they've ever seen in their life.
Oh, trust me. I mean,
that's what I used to always tell Pete. You don't get angry at the people who didn't show up. You be appreciative of the people who did show up. Because guess what? We play, you know, we're not paying our rent off of this. We invest all our money back into the band. We buy better gear. We buy, you know, better recordings. We put all our money back into it because we want this to be great. But it fulfills a need for us. So we, you know, if there's two people there, you get an intense show. If there's 40 people there, you get an intense show. If there's 100 people there, you get an intense show. We only know one way to do it. Yeah. And that's the way we do it. So, you know, we'd love people to come out, not just for us, but for them. You know, we'll introduce you to people. You know, it just so happens, like, hey, thanks for coming out. Why'd you come out? Oh, I saw you on, you know, Instagram. Oh, cool. Do you know so-and-so? Oh, no, cool, awesome. That's how you meet people. That's, you know, that's the point. That's social. That's our social network.
That is in the social bar, network. You know? You're so right. You're so right. I've met so many people that way. And I mean, from a photographer standpoint,
we met you.
First, you asked me if I had a power cord.
Yeah. I've got three of those now.
But see, that's Pete's three. Fearlessness. He'll walk up to a complete stranger and just be like, hey, you got a power cord? I don't know if I could, but Pete totally could. And that's great. That's his strength in the room.
Well, to me,
I'm not going to walk up to a serial killer and ask him if he's got a pickaxe and a shovel, you know, but. Hey, I saw you burying some things the other day. Trying to get some gardening done over here. You don't mind me borrowing your tools, do you? So, anyway.
I thought it was like a weird episode of, like, you know, Let's Make a Deal or something like that. If you have a power cord, I'll give you $50.
You can break my
I mean, we kind of touched on it, but, you know, we got the EP coming out.
Yep.
It's definitely, it's been mixed and mastered. It's ready to go. We're just waiting on finishing artwork, getting the layout together. We're going to press physical copies on CD. We're, you know, looking into vinyl options, but it's definitely going to be CD for now. And maybe not digital right away. Maybe you have to physically come out to a show or see one of us, and you know, it'll be digital eventually, but, you know, let's, you know, come to a show, let's talk, let's, you know, let's meet face to face. And, you know, we like to say, you know, it's you know, 2020. So is it 2020 or 20/20? Is it your the way you see things or the year?
One of these with the infamous 10 questions. So in no particular order, we're going to start over here and kind of work our way around. And very easy questions that have nothing to do with anything. Don't put much thought into it. Rapid fire.
Crap.
Don't worry, I'm going to give you the answers as well. So there is no right answers. Only wrong ones. All right. So Railroad District or Chelsea?
Railroad.
Ghent or Granby? I asked the guy who doesn't live.
Both.
Oh, okay, that works. 757 or 804?
757.
Al Green or Green Day?
Ooh, Al Green Day.
Very good.
Coming to a venue near you.
Coming to a venue near you. Night in the Town or a Night In?
Option B.
Night In.
That's just me.
Netflix or Spotify?
My record player.
And, wow, this is completely random because of all the people in the room, this one probably applies to you the least, but tubes or transistors?
Probably tubes.
Wow, this is going weird. Dumars or Handsome Biscuit?
I hate the first one. I don't know what the second one is. What is that?
Oh, Handsome Biscuit.
It's across from Toast. You know where Toast is?
I don't know anywhere it is. I haven't even moved to this town yet.
Oh, yeah. The Handsome Biscuit is like one of those really cool, trendy breakfast places that's so tripping, hip and trendy, none of us can actually get in.
It's like paper straws.
Yeah, lots of paper straws.
Oh, fuck paper straws.
Bernays on biscuits.
There you go.
Ooh.
Pineapple on pizza?
Sure.
Sure. And finally, vinyl or downloads?
Vinyl.
Vinyl. There it is. You all succeeded in the 10 questions.
Did we pass?
You passed. You passed with flying colors. Thanks, guys. We've been hanging out with Spirit Gun this evening. I'm looking forward to the EP coming out.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, anytime. Thanks for the coffee. Catch y'all down at the Tap House. And I'm James, and this is My Life in Virginia.
My Life in Virginia is a production of JGR 757 Multimedia Productions, LLC. All rights reserved. I'm Jenna Robinson, and I approve this message.